warnings from near and far.
As the U.S. comes closer to possible default.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. You're listening to the Midday Update, our podcast from Marketplace.org. It's Thursday, July 14th.
Happy Bastille Day, Steve.
Oh, it is. Wow.
It is.
Shall we go to the prison today? No?
Coming up, we'll hear about some dire warnings on the debt ceiling debate from rating agencies and from the largest foreign holder of U.S. debt.
We're going to find out how JPMorgan Chase managed to squeak out a 13% increase in profits last quarter despite a weak economy.
And marriage can be expensive, Steve, but no need to spend a fortune on matrimony anymore. We've got a deal for you just ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Carbonite Business, providing automatic online backup solutions for small businesses. Learn more and receive a free trial at Carbonite.com with code Marketplace.
Credit rating agencies Moody's and Standard & Poor's are keeping a close eye on debt ceiling talks. This morning's Wall Street Journal reports S&P has told some lawmakers it might cut the U.S. rating if the government fails to pay any of its bills, missing any payment to countries that hold U.S. debt or not sending out Social Security checks.
Now, meanwhile, Moody's says it's going to review the U.S.'s AAA rating because of growing uncertainty surrounding the debt. Marketplace's David Gura is with us now from Washington with the latest on that. Good morning, David.
Morning, Steve.
How is this going to affect the debt talks going on in Washington?
Well, this could be a warning shot, something that could scare politicians a little bit, maybe show them what might happen if they don't agree to a deal. I talked to Jan Randolph with IHS Global Insight, and I asked him what this looks like from London, where he's based.
The way they're managing the budget and the deficit and the debt ceiling is moving from one cliffhanger to the next. And that simply isn't the way one should run any finances, let alone that of the largest economy in the world.
Another risk analyst told me a downgrade could be potentially seismic, Steve, something that would affect investors around the world.
So connect the dots then, David. How have the debt talks turned into this global concern?
Well, interest rates on U.S. government debt would go up immediately. Bond investors would get skittish. And the situation may be an even bigger problem because other countries, and we've talked about them, Steve, Greece, Ireland, as you know, they're dealing with debt issues of their own.
And who's watching the closest? Who doesn't get paid if the U.S. can't pay its bills?
Well, the U.S. would have to make some tough decisions about this. What it'd be able to pay, whom it'd be able to pay. For instance, if it can't afford, say, salaries for federal workers and Social Security benefits, which would it pick? How would it prioritize that? And of course, there are all the investors that own U.S. debt. Foremost among them, Steve, China.
Marketplace's David Gura in Washington. David, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, the Chinese, as David mentioned, are watching this whole thing very, very closely. And China's foreign ministry said today it's hoping the U.S. will take a responsible attitude to protect investor interests. Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz reports.
China's been buying America for years, now owns more than 10% of United States outstanding debt, says Stephen Green, an economist with Standard Chartered.
So China is clearly not interested in the U.S. defaulting or any kind of getting even near defaulting.
Because that means China won't get paid. And it's not just U.S. debt that China's worried about. It's U.S. growth, too. The Federal Reserve is thinking about buying up government bonds again to pump some life into the U.S. economy. It's known as quantitative easing. A Chinese government economist said that's a bad idea. It would bring down the value of the dollar, and that would drive up the price of iron ore and other commodities, and that would make it more expensive for China to grow. But at the same time, says Green, China's stuck. Its economy is so tied up in the U.S. economy that it needs the U.S. to keep growing.
What does China actually want? Does it want quantitative easing to end and for the U.S. economy to slow down? Or does it really, at the end of the day, want growth?
What's clear is in the coming weeks, Beijing will join millions of Americans in keeping a close eye on what happens on Capitol Hill. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
We got a first look at the health of the financial sector this morning with a quarterly earnings report from JPMorgan Chase. The bank says profits were up 13% last quarter, but not because of strength on the consumer side.
Marketplace's New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore joins us now with the details. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, Heidi, where is the profit coming from for JPMorgan?
Well, basically, J.P. Morgan has decided to put less money aside in case they lose money on loans. So that's about $1 billion that is reflecting a profit for them, but is not actually a real profit.
And how important are the earnings that we'll get from other banks, as well as J.P. Morgan, the financial sector, when it comes to the rest of the economy?
It's crucial, actually, because J.P. Morgan is a big lender, in fact, the number one lender to small businesses. And we've seen what happens with big businesses. They're doing okay. The consumer is struggling. But we have this middle branch of small businesses that really need a boost. So when J.P. Morgan does well, it increases the chances that they'll lend to them. Here's Quincy Crosby. She's a strategist with Prudential Financial.
Let's remember that small business owners are responsible for about 40% of all new job creation. They have been a missing part, a crucial part of the economic mosaic of this recovery.
So J.P. Morgan plans to lend about $12 billion more to small businesses this year. If that works, this should be a good sign for the rest of the economy going forward.
Marketplace New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore, thanks so much.
Thank you, Jeremy.
And let's get some analysis now from our regular Thursday guest, Diane Swonk, chief economist with Mesirow Financial. She is with us from Chicago. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Diane, is this going to be another quarter where banks make their profits but don't really lend much more money to consumers?
I'm afraid that's the most likely scenario. Banks can make more money lending to corporate clients. And on the other side of it, consumer loans are getting harder for them to make money on and give. We've got a lot of regulations coming out down the pike. It's going to make it even harder for consumers to get mortgages that have nothing to do with the banks, even in their attempt to deal with the credit situation.
Diane, let me ask you also about the debt ceiling debate that's going on in Washington. There was this warning from Moody's yesterday, the rating agency, about potentially downgrading the U.S. credit rating if there is no debt limit increase. What do you think is going to happen here?
We're now getting the clock is ticking. We're now getting to the point where it doesn't look like we're going to get any kind of agreement to move forward, but we will have to get an increase in the debt ceiling. That just has to occur. If it doesn't, the costs are going to be enormous to the U.S. economy, and we just can't afford that. My fear is that we'll get an increase in the debt ceiling with no movement forward or agreement on how to deal with our own fiscal situation here in the United States. I just hope they can regroup after they do that and figure out how to choose our future rather than let foreigners choose it for us.
Diane Swonk, chief economist with Mesirow Financial, thanks so much.
Thank you.
405,000 Americans filed for first-time jobless claims last week. The Labor Department said that's down by 22,000 from the week before. Encouraging news, yeah, that layoffs are slowing, but the nation's unemployment rate stands at 9.2%. In Oklahoma City, that rate is 4.9%, the lowest of any metropolitan area in the country. Michael Cross from station KOSU reports on what's happening in OKC.
Construction crews are putting the finishing touches on a 340,000-square-foot outlet mall in western Oklahoma City. The outlet shops will contain more than 100 stores and employ more than 1,000 people. Marketing VP Gina Selecta says bringing the mall to Oklahoma City was a no-brainer.
Oklahoma City doesn't know what recession means. Your economy here is very diverse. It's very strong. So the Oklahoma market is very exciting.
The city's Chamber of Commerce estimates the metro area has added 3,400 new jobs this year. Oklahoma's largest city is adding 550 jobs with Boeing's move from Long Beach, California, and a national wireless company is planning a 218-employee call center. So what made Oklahoma City the place to do business?
A lot of it's luck.
That's Chamber President Roy Williams, who's had a hand in getting many businesses to the central part of the state. Oklahoma City has made several investments to attract industries from biosciences to aerospace to energy. Voters also passed a 1-cent sales tax to spruce up the downtown, which is bringing industry and tourists to the capital city. But Williams says the city has to keep a business-like approach.
You don't ever sit back and say, I've got enough customers. I don't need to make any more sales. You know, I'm content with who's walking in the front door. Well, sooner or later, they quit walking in. Every morning, you got to get up and get right back at it.
Just last year, the Kauffman Foundation declared Oklahoma City the best entrepreneurial city in the nation with the most startups per capita. In Oklahoma City, I'm Michael Cross for Marketplace.
Congress will be looking into internet privacy today. It's become a big issue as online sites like Facebook and Google have made a business out of mining user data for ad revenue. In fact, Steve, I heard someone say a couple of weeks ago that if you're getting something for free on the internet, you are not the customer, you're the product. Which is probably true.
There you go.
And as Marketplace's Steve Henn reports now, there's a new study that finds consumers are actually willing to pay more for online products if they know their privacy is being protected.
Most academic studies in the past found people really are not willing to pay more money to protect their privacy online. But this one was different. Lori Craner at Carnegie Mellon was one of the authors.
Well, we set it up so that people did a search with a search engine that looked very much like a Google search engine. And when they got their search results, we annotated the search results with a privacy meter. And so you could see at a glance which sites had high privacy, medium privacy, low privacy.
And you could also see at a glance what the prices were.
Yes.
Turns out when it's that easy, folks are willing to pay more at a website that protects privacy. And it doesn't matter what they're shopping for.
We did a follow-up study where we actually had people shop for a set of batteries and then also something much more privacy-sensitive. And we found that for the privacy-sensitive item, they were actually willing to pay a little bit more.
That item's so privacy-sensitive, I get the feeling you're reluctant to actually say what it was.
I can tell you.
But I can't broadcast it. In Silicon Valley, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Well, the online music service Spotify launches in the U.S. today. Have you ever heard of that, Jeremy?
No, Spotify, I have not heard of Spotify.
It's Pandora, I guess, with a twist. And it's a big hit in Europe with 10 million registered users there. But some music companies are concerned they're going to lose even more sales as listeners stream songs online. From London, the BBC's Duncan Bartlett has more.
Spotify offers more music than any other website except for iTunes. Its library of 15 million songs is searchable, and it's free to listen online, provided you also listen to advertisements. But for $5 a month, the ads are removed, and for $10, you can listen on your mobile phone. 15% of users in Europe pay for these services, but some of the biggest record labels initially refused to join, saying it would hurt sales. The music industry is struggling to find a business model in the digital era and has been suffering a decline in sales for almost a decade, ever since Napster allowed users to download music for free. Napster's co-creator, Sean Parker, is now a managing partner at Spotify.
What I'm trying to do with Spotify is finish what I started with Napster. The distribution model for music remains broken. I've dedicated the rest of my career to trying to fix what I broke.
Leaked figures suggest Spotify aims to have 50 million US users in its first year and plans a partnership with Facebook. In London, I'm the BBC's Duncan Bartlett for Marketplace.
Now, Jeremy, staying in Britain now, it is Matrimony in a Machine, an interactive device company that's come up with this thing called the AutoWed, as in wedding. It's an 8-foot-high pink vending-like apparatus that'll marry you and your lover for just under $2.
$2?
Yes. Cheap, man.
That's a steal.
Cheap. Yes. You could, I mean, it's about like the can of soda or, you know, maybe a bag of Doritos. It's not binding, of course. It's just a ceremonial thing. The machine, it can only be found in Britain, and it features buttons for I do or escape.
Escape.
You can
not
escape.
I don't.
No.
You've got to escape
no.
right
you
out
to
of
escape.
There.
Get out of there. Maybe it's an eject button or something like that. It spits out a couple of plastic rings to mark the occasion as well. And if the arrangement doesn't work out, AutoWed also allows you to print out this 10% off coupon for an auto divorce.
Do they have the machine right next door for auto divorce?
So.
This podcast is supported by Carbonite Business, online automatic backup designed for small businesses. Carbonite Business automatically backs up files to a secure offsite location. In the event of a hard drive crash, virus, or other problem, files can easily be recovered. More information and a free trial by visiting Carbonite.com using the code Marketplace.
Well, Steve, we've got all these big budget cuts being debated in Washington, and I've got a question for you.
Please.
Do you think that if there were to be big cuts, that you personally would feel it in the benefits that you receive from the government?
I don't think so, unless like interest rates or something like that. But no, I don't
but
think
not,
so.
not food stamps
no,
or jobless
no.
benefits
no.
and stuff like that. Well, we're going to talk about that now with Marketplace Economics correspondent Chris Farrell and find out if you're right. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, Chris, how dependent are Americans en masse when it comes to government support?
Well, Jeremy, the era of big government, it isn't over.
Hmm.
I mean, about 20% of our income last year came from government benefits. That's up from 14% before the recession hit. So that's things like jobless benefits, food stamps, children's health insurance, Medicaid, housing assistance. So a lot of Americans are very dependent on this government spending.
And what about people like you and me who have jobs? We are not getting jobless benefits. And frankly, when I look over the course of the things that I do in my life, I don't really see a whole lot of government support. But am I wrong about that?
well, maybe you need a new pair of glasses, or maybe you should look a little more closely. Because, you know, things that I mentioned, like jobless benefits, let's call that the visible state. I mean, you see the government action. But there's also this thing, it's a wonderful term from a Cornell University scholar, Suzanne Mettler, called the submerged state. And there's all this social spending that's encouraged through the tax code. Just pick the two biggest. The exclusion from taxes of what the employer contributes to your medical insurance. Mm. And the other big one is, of course, the mortgage interest deduction. So there's a lot of good social spending that's encouraged through the tax code, but it affects all of us.
Well, if the government is about to make big cuts, whether it be in the next couple of months or down the road a bit further, do you think that most Americans will feel that?
Jeremy, here's the fact of the matter. This is the takeaway point. There is no painless way to reduce the deficit and the debt. It will affect everybody. It will affect them in terms of their housing, in terms of their medical care, in terms of their jobless benefits.
Marketplace economics correspondent Chris Farrell, thanks very much.
Thanks a lot.
And finally to Texas, where residents have just discovered that a New York City restaurant has named a sandwich for them. Steve, it's called Deep in the Heart Attack of Texas.
The Heart Attack of Texas.
Yeah, right.
Nice.
It is chicken fried steak covered with gravy and macaroni and cheese smashed in between two buttery pieces of Texas toast.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it sounds pretty good. Huh?
It does.
Well, not to all Texans, including one reader of the Houston Press who says the sandwich is far too small to be associated with Texas.
Oh, well, of course. It's got to be six stories high.
But he continues, they do love their dinky portions up there in NYC.
No.
Yeah.
That's not very nice.
The old rivalry.
Yeah.
Between Texas and New York City. I don't know if there was an old rivalry, but now there is. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. Enjoy your day. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
Shoot low, Sheriff. I think she's riding a Shetland. Oh!
And this is APM, American Public Media.